everyone, and welcome back to the Everyday Business Show. I'm your host, Tony Lontis, and today we have the wonderful Amir Michelle, real estate agent. Now, before we get on with the show, just a reminder, if you are watching this live, you will find links to all of Amir's information below in the description, including all of his LinkedIn company links and his many websites where you can find amazing information on buying, selling, renovating real estate. But here's what you need to know about Amir before we start the show. Amir is the author of the three Where's the Bees Blueprint. See, it's a tongue twister every week. Where's the Bees Blueprint? It's about renovation, options, conquering LinkedIn, monetizing on Facebook, and et cetera, all to do with real estate. Now, Amir started his real estate journey when he watched his parents renovate for profit, and he's had a love of real estate ever since, starting on his own journey at about 16 years of age with just $5,000. He now manages multiple properties across Australia, and as we speak today, he is back in Oberon continuing renovation on his current set of properties, and we're going to talk a little bit about that later today. But good morning, Amir. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, Tony. Fantastic. Thank you for having me again.
I love these conversations about real estate. I learn so much each week from the wonderful tips that you provide to the audience. Now, seeing that you're in Oberon, and we were talking before the show about the wonders of Oberon, and interestingly enough, Amir was talking about his process. So he's got multiple properties on the go and under renovation at the moment. And Amir, you were telling me about your process. So you'll go from one house and get it livable, and then you'll sequentially go through the other properties and get them up to date. So what's happening today?
So I work with a few different clients. The clients usually live in Sydney, which is about 2.5 hours away from Oberon, and they need a combination of trades. But not just the trades you find in the yellow pages. They want somebody who's done a job before, who comes with a great review, who's trustworthy and capable of doing the job. Oberon Council is also very good at understanding what the plans are for a place. So we obviously draft up first what we're going to do, the rough cost of the labour and the materials. We talk to council about it. And then if need be, we do a letterbox drop next to the house. So the neighbours don't get a shock when a big truck pulls up and, a bunch of stuff is taken to Oberon Tip. So there's a few steps, but as you were saying before, Tony, just jumping from one property to the next means you're not traveling 2 hours there, 2 hours back, 2 hours there, 2 hours back. So when you're planning out your year, you would probably realize that if you're doing some work in far north Queensland, you'd want to leave that out of the summertime. You wouldn't want to do it in the middle of summer because it's rainy season. You also wouldn't want to do things in Oberon in the middle of winter. So when you're planning out what type of clients you can have at the summertime and at the wintertime, you fill up your calendar to make sure that you're not wasting half the time traveling backwards and forwards. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, Tony, but living on site in a house that's being renovated is terrible.
Oh, yes.
It is no fun.
It's not fun.
So you either end up renting accommodation, whether it's Airbnb or VRBO or bookings.com or at the local motel or hotel, or you end up compromising.
In a tent.
Well, maybe. Almost. Especially if you're starting work at 7 a.m. and you're getting up at 6 a.m. to be there on time, you wouldn't want to be in a tent because it's too temperature dependent. There's times in a tent where you're not going to get your first hot shower fast enough to get into your clothes fast enough. So it just slows down the whole day. And you want to be focused on the job, not distracted by weather, not distracted by the elements. So I aim to do things that are close in proximity geographically to one another. So there's one client at the moment that I'm helping to buy a property. They live not in Oberon, but they've engaged me to buy a house for them in Oberon. And they've given me the size of the land that they want, which is over 1,700 square meters. So now I'm questioning the local 20 real estate agents. I'm looking through the normal information that's on the marketing side, but I'm also doing the door knocking and letterbox dropping to the next door neighbors when after I've done the research and found out what's close to the pool or close to the park or close to the golf course or close to the sailing club, so that we're finding the correct area, a big enough piece of land, something that can be subdivided, and then actually visiting those people to say, look, you know, this is, I'm here representing a client, et cetera, et cetera. While I'm doing that, and that might take up 20 to 40 hours a week to do, I can let somebody who's an electrician, a plumber, a builder, a carpenter come in, inspect and quote on a property that is owned by somebody I helped in the past. So if all I'm doing is opening the door for somebody to come and measure, it might take my time 15 minutes to be there and to let them through the front door and then let them out and lock up again. But during that time, I'm using that to make phone calls and booking in the time for me to inspect the property that I'm buying as a buyer's agent for my other client. So if you think about how long it takes to buy a property, but you realize you're going to be in Brisbane or you're going to be in the Sunshine Coast or you're going to be in Melbourne or you're going to be in Bendigo, once you've done this for enough years to know how long each process should take, I generally double whatever time I expect it to take. So if I think something would take 15 minutes, I allocate 30 minutes. If I think travel time is 1 hour, I allocate 2 hours. Give yourself that buffer, but then put everything onto the same weekend, the same week, the same three-month holiday so that you can get the most efficiency and focus out of what you're doing. So when you're saying that I bunny hop between the properties, that's true. But what I do is I make sure that one is at the level where I can release it to the professional experts with a license so they can continue without any supervision or without me having to give the answers back to the clients that own those properties. So at the moment, there's five properties that we started off maybe 6 years ago. There's five properties that we controlled. So either purchased or bought the option for or sold the option for, but somehow have a vested interest in. And of those five properties, two of them are now completely finished and gone to the next person, the final, we call it the ultimate buyer, the UB. So two of them have already gone to the ultimate buyer, but the last three are still in that process where the ultimate buyer is now commissioning the electrician, the asbestos remover, the cladding installer, the carpenter, the builder to do whatever they've envisioned for that property. So my job now is to make sure that the people that say that they're on site actually show up and don't leave halfway through the day. I send reports back to my clients. So I only use my mobile to take photos. They're not very fancy. They're not photos for archival purposes or advertising purposes, but it gives enough. I mean, mobile phones these days are so good that you can really get a widescreen from your mobile. So the lenses there let you take, you know, the wide angle photos and all that type of stuff. So just for keeping records of who showed up, what they did, it's enough. And all one person has to be is there to make sure the person shows up, has their license with them, has their insurance covered and all the important things when it's your six-figure income that's on the line or your seven-figure property that's on the line. You want to make sure that nobody's stuffing around with it.
Yeah, so as a buyer's agent, you can not only do the research, find the property, but what I'm hearing is that you can also help with the scheduling of the renovations and keep an eye on that property if they're purchasing from another state, for instance.
So as a real estate,
part of your role as well?
If you do the real estate agent course and you become a real estate agent, you can specialize in being a buyer's agent, specialize in being a selling agent, or specialize in being a property manager. Most commonly, the people that supervise the trades that come along, whether they're plumbers or carpet layers or electricians, are the property managers. They schedule the meetings, the inspections, the quotations, the jobs, and then usually they have a register for what keys they give out, when the keys are returned, etc. So, yes, in my license, I'm allowed to do property management. I don't specialize in that. I specialize as a buyer's agent. But when I've already worked for somebody as a buyer's agent and they want to use my services as a property manager, they might pay me to drive out, spend the day somewhere and drive back. If I've got multiple jobs at the site, then I might just charge them for 1 hour instead of the travel time, et cetera. So, yes, I can do that. And especially for interstate, there's different schedules that you might keep when you're doing a property development. One of them would be the professional inspection, where you want something in writing, both for your bank and for yourself, to say this property has or hasn't asbestos, it has or hasn't got termites, it is or isn't in a flood zone, it is or isn't in a bushfire zone. So those type of reports, you commission yourself rather than relying on somebody else. You pay somebody with a license to give you in writing the actual answer, and you keep that on your records as well as giving it to either your insurance company or your bank or both. So those type of things I would commission somebody else to do rather than doing myself. But to let somebody into the front door with the permission of the owner is something that I can do for one of my owners or one of the people that I've worked for.
Fantastic. So when people engage you as a buyer's agent, they're actually getting a whole range of skills from not only your licensing, but your extensive experience in buying, selling and renovating real estate, aren't they?
They ask a lot of questions that would help them and shortcut some of the answers. Unless they, you know, specifically agree and want to use me to do other larger projects, normally it's a conversation. So most of the time I can answer most things over the phone or on email rather than having to travel to site. The benefit of using a buyer's agent that's actually been in the trenches like myself, that's done the do, that's walked the walk, is that you can see what potential hazards are coming a mile away rather than experiencing them and then halfway through the day freezing like a deer in the headlights and stopping everything. There's nothing worse than planning and then having to stop because you didn't think of step two or step three. A good example of that, Tony, is around 10 years ago, I moved a front door of a house. So the house was built with an entryway, almost like a hallway that's external to the house. So you would walk under a cover and then get into the house before you open the front door. It was only about a meter and a half walkway. But because the front door was out of the rain, it was designed in that way just to make it comfortable. But it was a big indent into the lounge room. So that made the lounge room a 3 meter by 3 meter lounge room. So the first thing I did when I remeasured and worked out which one is a supporting wall and had the builder and consultants there was move the front door from that meter and a half into the room into lineup, almost lineup, so a little bit indented, maybe it was 20 centimeters, from the wallway so that the wall was in line with the door frame. That seems simple. The one thing, because it was 10 years ago and I'm not a builder, that I would have ideally liked the builder to tell me ahead of time was that halfway through the job, they would have to stop and wait for an electrician to move the meter box from where it was in front of the door on the outside of the house. Now that the door has moved, the meter box has to be moved, but it can't be moved by them and it can't be moved by a normal electrician. They need what's called a level two electrician in New South Wales. And they can't proceed until that's done. So halfway through the job, so they quoted for it to be a 7-day job, meaning we can move in 10 days. Halfway through, they said, right, and now can you get the electrician? It's like, okay, but you're handling everything. So they were contracted to do the painting, the carpentry, the plumbing, the everything. They didn't mention that their electrician wasn't capable of doing that thing. They needed to hire somebody else. When they booked the job 2 months in advance, they didn't say, make sure you prepare this and this and this. But them as the project manager, as the builder in charge of the other trades, they would have done this before. So they should have known that when you move a door to the other side of the meter, unless it's one of these remote control meters that come with a Wi-Fi signal, you need to move the box as well. Somebody who's never done that before, as a layperson, wouldn't have known. It's just not one of the things you guess. You think, okay, I'm hiring a builder to supervise and bring all the other trades. I don't know how many trades they're expecting. I don't care. I pay them to supervise to do the job until it's finished. They tell me it's finished in 7 days, which means in 8 days or 9 days, I can move in. So imagine if you had all of your furniture packed up, all of your clothes and suitcases, the removalist truck ready to move from your old house to your new house, your lease is finished, and then they say, okay, well, now we need to book somebody else. So you call frantically 30 people to try to find somebody with the license that can do it and that isn't booked that week. And most tradespeople, if they're good, they might be booked 2 weeks in advance. I've had some that are booked 12 weeks in advance, meaning 3 months. So imagine living in a suitcase, not having a family, not having anywhere to take your family, and paying already for your job, but not being able to move in. So now, in effect, you're paying for two houses, one that you're about to move into but can't be moved into because there's no electricity, and the second one, which, well, you've told the owner, the landowner, the bank that you've sold it or you've rented it out. So what do? You end up going to a hotel? Do you have a friend who wouldn't mind a family of four or five coming over and sleeping on their couch? I mean, it's okay for one night to find a hotel. It's okay for three nights. But if you're waiting 12 weeks for the door to move, mind you, that's the front door of the house. So you've got no front door and no electricity. It's just not livable. So some people can see those things miles ahead. And it's always better to benefit from somebody else's experience rather than to go through every bit of trouble yourself. Some things are fun things you want to experience yourself, but you don't need to go through all the problems yourself.
Definitely not. So in that instance, Amir, I'm hoping that you got someone to help with that pretty quickly. How did it turn out?
So, Tony, in the olden days, I'd say that I had a very thick Rolodex. That's old person talk. A box that had lots of bits of cardboard that had handwritten names of people that did certain things. I'm good with the internet. So I checked on Google. I did my research and I called up the locals that I checked first were licensed to be level two electricians. And having that many people on my mobile phone, on my contact list and available through the internet, and because it was a metro job, not a regional job, I managed to find somebody in 3 days. But it could have gone horribly southways, horrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's an important consideration in a buyer's agent, that they do have that wealth of connections to help sort any sorts of issues that might come up. So I'm assuming that over the course of this lifetime spent in real estate, that you have lots of trustworthy trades and licensed work people to do different things. So if one falls down, you can easily go, okay, I'm going to give it to Joe Bloggs, or I'm going to give Joe a call and see if he can do that for me. That's not the case with all real estate buyers agents, is it? Some of them don't have the wealth of knowledge, the breadth and depth of connections that you have, do they?
No, they don't. And it really comes to the level of your A-team. If you've got an A-team if you have a good builder, a good fencer, a good roofer, a good gutter, a good tiler, a good carpenter, a good painter, you maintain the friendships by making sure that they're getting jobs from you often and that they're paid immediately, so that they don't feel any resentment or they don't have to chase you for bills. So if you keep the relationships by doing the right thing over a course of time and you're consistent with your A-team, they'll keep doing jobs for you. I have had instances where one of my tradespeople that I trust has driven 5 hours one direction, stayed two nights at the location and drove another 5 hours back just for the job, because they were 10 times better than a local that was available. So sometimes the people that are local that are available are quickly available for a reason, and that is that they don't have good views, they don't have a good reputation. They'll do the job, but they'll do the absolute minimum. At other times, you can find a local that's absolutely brilliant and you'll see that they're booked 3 months or 6 months in advance. If you're desperate, you might end up thinking of hiring a local that's not going to do a great job. But if you have an A team, you can bring somebody, as long as you're paying for their petrol and their accommodation, potentially they'll be willing to work for you at a distance, spend the 2 days away from their family because it's you, because you're asking, because they've got a good working relationship with you. If one thing is now very much different to what it was 20 or 30 years ago, is that especially on the internet, a lot of people are niching. What do I mean by that?
Right.
I mean, even 7 years ago, you would find a carpenter that worked with a variety of different trades in the same house. So the bathroom renovator, the cabinet maker, the carpenter, even the fly screen maker, all knew each other because they were on 15 jobs every year together. Today, mostly because the internet isn't as geographically bound as the previous work, you can find people that have never worked together in the same house. So you might find the same five trades at five different houses, and each one of them is different and hasn't worked with each other. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because it means that you can negotiate on price, you can negotiate on timing, you can find somebody that's available at your time rather than waiting for the whole team to be ready at the same time. But the downside is that they don't have that ease of communication that is built through years of working elbow to elbow with somebody else. So you do miss out on a little bit of that, but you can get somebody who is independently good rather than just being good because of the friends they keep. So there's a good and a bad about it. One of the things that it's affected is the buyer's agents and the selling agents, because unlike the previous 20 years where your real estate agent knew the best plumber, electrician, etc., the real estate agent now is using the same internet that you're using. So they have a full-time job to do, and it's in your interest to get it right. So quite often you would do a better job than asking your buyer's agent or selling agent to find the trades for you. The only exception, of course, is a property manager, where their job is always to interact with the trades, always to do the inspection, to see what's wrong, to fix things for a tenant. So they do have the daily interaction. So a property manager is actually somebody who's got and keeps those relationships. So that would be the exception to the rule. But quite often now, the niching that happens is that buyer's agents are so niched that they do just the buying. Sometimes they're even niched to the level where they do only buyers buying for buyers who want to buy a home to live in rather than an investment property. And if they're niched to buy your owner-occupied home, your principal place
it's
of residence,
kind of different, isn't it?
It's different, and it usually does not involve any tradespeople. Because when you move into a house, that's when you call your interior designer, your graphic designer, your architect, and you have a different type of A-team. And those A-teams normally recommend the tradespeople, the carpet layers, the painters, et cetera. So, yeah, a lot of that, the more you niche, the less you have with those relationships to offer to your clients.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking lots about real estate. I just want to segue a little bit and reference the beautiful imagery in the back of you, 3DB tree. Now, it's a little while since we've talked. Tell the audience about 3DB tree. Yes, it's a wonderful mouthful, but you're not going to forget 3DB tree, are you? Tell us about that.
The thing about the 3D is that it's really the three segments, which are the do-it-yourself, done for you, and that middle section, which is the done with you. So do-it-yourself is self-evident. You research, you find out, you learn, and you do. The done with you is more of a tutorial or a workshop style of an 8-week to 12-week program. I say 8 weeks because you get 8 lessons, but there's 12 opportunities or 12 weeks where if you miss one, you can catch one up. But that's the done with you deal. And the done for you is me jumping in as a buyer's agent and doing everything from the bidding, the research, the negotiations for you, even to the stage of perhaps flying out to Tasmania to find out what's on the market at the moment and meet the people that are doing the pest inspections and the asbestos inspections, et cetera. So that's a complete, you know, give me a brief, send me hunting. But that's the 3D. Yes. That's why the DIY, yes. DWF, and DWY is DDD, 3Ds. But the interesting thing about there's two things. I don't think we've spoken about this before, Tony. There's the B side and there's the tree side. So in the 3D B tree, yes. The B, this is a really funny story. When I was a little baby, I think I was roughly 1 year old. My parents went for a trip overseas, and they brought me back a gift from Germany. Now, one of the cartoons back in the days, back when I was young and dinosaurs roamed the earth, was a cartoon called Maya the Bee. I don't know if you remember Maya the Bee.
I do.
Originally, that was a German cartoon. So they, on their trip to Germany, they brought back a bee. So they brought an inflatable Maya the Bee doll. So in my cot, and I've seen photos of this recently, that there's me, the size of a one-year-old, and there's an inflatable bee bigger than me sitting in my cot. And I'm like, whoa. So I don't know if that's influenced me, but one of the lessons that I learned when I was working at the bank was that when a bank evaluates how good a property is from their perspective, they look at how low the risk is. And for a bank, the more the tenant can earn, so if you've got a good tenant that's on a good job, the safer and more comfortable the bank feels. So in a way, the bank is looking for where the busy bees are, and the tenants that they're looking at, they don't want just one tenant in a city that earns high amount and they're the needle in the haystack. They prefer the city to have an average income or a mean that's higher. If your median income is higher, then they know that if one tenant goes, one tenant moves to another company, moves into state, they can find another. So where the bees are tells you what investment property is going to be long term. It tells you where you can actually find other trades. So if you're in the area where there are a lot of busy bees working around, you tend to find plumbers, electricians, and trades. It also tells you where development is happening in the future. So one of the research things that you do is work out where the government is being a busy bee. So where's the bees actually fits into a lot of different categories that I search for when I'm looking for property. And I've done that for so many years that it's now a blueprint of the where's the bees blueprint rather than just a concept. There's more of a step-by-step guide rather than trying to take it by the seat of your pants. And the tree, so there's a couple of things about the tree. So my name, Amir, actually means the top of a tree. So when you look up the dictionary meaning of it, it's famous in a lot of different countries, in India, in Israel, in Egypt, in Lebanon, and it means different things in different countries. But in Israel, it means the top of a tree. So the tree part of the 3DB tree makes sense to me. But the other side of having a three-dimensional business, meaning the do-it-yourself, done with you and done for you, is that building those A-teams, when you're meeting somebody who's a good carpenter and a good tiler, a good roofer, et cetera, you're building relationships with people that either know other investors or they invest in property themselves. They usually know selling real estate agents and buying agents. They usually know property managers. So they are a tree network all by themselves, especially if they've lived in the area for a while and they've laid down roots, so to speak. So then you've got the tree of the 3DB tree linking together all the professions that are in that metro area, in that suburb, in that town. And that works together with the 3D side of if you're going to do it yourself, you need to have good connection of networking. If you're going to get somebody to do it for you, they need to have a good connection or networking in the area. So the busy bees make sense, the tree makes sense, and the 3D makes sense. But without having them all together, you're still missing the secret ingredients. It's really the fact that you've got all three of those things together, the 3D bee tree, that makes it a system rather than just let's learn this and try to implement, let's learn this and try to implement. Making it all together as a 3D bee tree is far more
system.
Far more of a system. It's far easier to estimate the end result when you know which part was planted 5 or 10 years in the past.
I mean, yeah, going back to where the bees are, I've got a question about government and how you go about finding out what government has in terms of plans for the region that you're looking at. Is it internet? Do you talk to the council? Do you talk to the state government? How do you go about finding some of that information? Because sometimes governments are a little unlikely to give away all the things that they have planned for an area, but you must have a way of gathering that particular information because it's very important, isn't it?
It is important. And I've probably found that you're right in some cases that the government doesn't give all their secrets away, but quite often, possibly just ahead of an election. So we're coming up to state elections, yes, coming up to regional elections. So sometimes in the 4 weeks preceding an election, you hear all the promises of how bright the future is going to be. And that's when the government opens the books and says, oh, we're planning to spend $15 billion here and $16 trillion there. Not $16 trillion. I'm exaggerating there a little bit. But it is an open book just before elections. Now, the catch is that it's until the ground is broken and they've started the project,
yes,
all of that is a decision, a conversation with the community.
Mm-hmm.
We've had, in Oberon, when I was in Sydney, I received an email because I'm logged in to different sources. So when something happens within a township that I'm looking at, I get an automatic email. There was a town hall meeting, meaning that the government told the community that they're going to have a discussion about an upcoming project. And this was a very large UK-based company that wanted to invest in Oberon and bring the digital system that includes a computerized greenhouse that they use successfully in the UK into Oberon. So the good thing about Oberon being that high elevation off sea level is that you do get more consistent days, as meaning that when you work out the sunshine that hits Oberon, because it's above certain cloud cover, because you have less interference from smog, you do get more rain, you do get more cold, but you also get more daylight hours. So there are numbers that they crunched and said, we can build, buy, manufacture and supply a very large piece of land and from that feed Sydney and feed Bathurst, so the east and the west, from that little area, yeah, as well as have enough for export. And the town hall meeting estimated $240 million that the project was worth.
Gosh.
Not bad. That's for a town of around 6,000 people.
Mm.
So they had a very big town hall meeting. They had three discussions, and from the mayor's perspective, from the government's perspective, it throws light on Oberon, meaning that they bring more visitors in during holiday season, there's more tourists coming in, there's more visibility of what Oberon is contributing to from a hardware point of view to Bunnings Warehouse, for example. From a farming and a factory and a quarry point of view to construction, from the timber trusses. So all the 100 different companies that were in Oberon got a little boost out of being in the news for a positive thing. But the citizens voted against it. So at the end of the day, the people living in Oberon read all these plans and said, this is a major development. And somewhere along the line, there was disagreement, and so the plan just didn't go ahead. And that happens everywhere in Australia. So the local government tells you something's coming up and you do find out about it when you're logged into the right kind of websites, newsletters, email accounts. But until the ground is broken, don't put money against it. Don't bet on it until you can see that the government's actually started the job. That's happened in Western Australia as well, in Port Hedland. Port Hedland was a place that I was investing in. The local government put through a paper suggesting the marina upgrade, and it was they were building a resort, a marina. It had accommodation. It had a caravan park attached. I believe it was a $30 million job, but, you know, that's nothing. It's just a start. But from that, there was a much larger project attached over a 10-year period. A few things happened with the Port Hedland job, which meant that the wind cycle was blowing dust in the wrong direction. And so for them to get final approval after all the environmental studies, some of the residents that were living within the area had to move and change the area to be commercial only, not residential and commercial. The other way was to close some of the commercial facilities that were causing the dust and completely change the landscape. Everything's expensive, but it's not just the price. It's also the community consideration, and the community gets a vote. Yes. So the people that are paying their rates to that council each have a vote of should we go ahead or not go ahead. So until the job has begun and the government has invested enough to show that they're doing the work on it, you can't count on a project. A big one in Sydney is Badgerys Creek. So there's an airport that's been discussed for 50 years to build in Western Sydney. 10 years ago, it was agreed on which part and how large. And then every 5 years, we're getting an update to see how it's progressing along. But before 2030, we're still not going to see any planes moving in and out of it. And it's 2021 now. So, you know, that's, yes, it makes sense in the future, but how far into the future? Now, the Olympic Games. So when Sydney got the Olympic Games in 2000, there was a lot of construction that happened between 2018 and 2020. Some construction started much earlier because they announced the games many years before they happened. But the big push happened in the last 2 years. Now, Queensland is getting the Olympics in.
Yes.
Yeah, you've heard of that?
And they're already talking about it, yes.
So
constantly people, talking about it.
Exactly. So people are talking about how that's going to affect real estate prices, which suburb is going to be the best suburb. The Olympics are an event that lasts for less than 6 months. So it might be just a four-week ceremony, and there might be tourists a month before and a month after. That's a three-month period. The advertising will happen probably 2 months before the Olympics and probably 1 month after. So altogether, you're looking at a six-month blip on the radar, a six-month period where you're going to get a lot of people coming and construction finishing, because construction happening isn't fun to watch, but when it's all finished, it's great. So there'll be that beautiful six-month period in 2036 where things are going to be the best of the best that you've seen for decades in Queensland. But what happens before and what happens after? How much work is going to go into roads being blocked off, construction, et cetera, that'll slow traffic down 2 years before the Olympics? Because for big projects, there's sometimes a lot of demolition that happens. Sometimes it's a road widening. But at any stage that it happens, there's always something associated with it, but people put up with it knowing, oh, yeah, we're doing this because in 2 years' time, that's our deadline. We know it's going to be finished. So they realize it's not a forever game, and they're okay to put up with it for a while. But when you're doing your maths and when you're researching, it's worthwhile to know what's going to be a long-term play and what's just a flash in the pan, what is going to be just once off, and how long will that result last financially for you? Can you push your rents up during those times? Or is it the fact that when the Olympics are coming, people won't want to rent your house because they know the house, the whole street will be crowded for that 1 month period? So it's a very interesting calculation. I hate the word interesting. You say interesting and it's so vague, but it's quite an in-depth and varied computational calculation. So you need to think about why you're investing and what's the long-term play.
I mean, yeah, there would be statistics around those big events in terms of their long-term population growth, jobs generated. There would be existing statistics around that information, which you should be able to, in some way, extrapolate towards, let's use Queensland, 2036. But there's a lot of variable in there, isn't there?
There's a lot of variable. Let's say that this is a pure hypothetical, but let's say that you're looking at a time clock where you look at a city 5 years before the Olympics and 10 years before, and 5 years before the Olympics, 5 years after. If you were to look at the influence of the Olympics held in, say, 1920, and then held in 2020.
Yes.
You couldn't compare the two for what the effect was, because in 1920, it was very rare for people to travel such a long distance just for a show, just for an event. Mm-hmm. In 2020, yeah, we are globetrotters, so that people travel.
Apart from the virus.
That's what I was coming to. So now we are globetrotters. We just expect, well, I'm upset because Europe is blocked off from Australia. We can't travel to Europe. So it's a way of thinking for us now that didn't exist 100 years ago. 2036 is, if we think of the virus starting in December 2019 and continuing through.
Yes, yes.
There could be a possibility that in 2036, the virus is still around, but enough people are immunized that they just treat it as the cold. They go, okay, well, it's okay. The risk is very low. We'll be sick in bed for 3 days, and then, you know, with the vaccine or with the immunization or with whatever we're using, the virus is still around, but we still travel because we're okay being in bed for 2 days and then fully recovered. So we can't judge what it's going to look like in 2036. But if there's a case where people are holding their breath and not traveling for a period of 6 months, and then all of a sudden, when the doors open and allow us to travel, we have an event like the Olympics coming up, then the result is dramatically different from the previous Olympics or the Olympic before then. So you have to take some statistics with a grain of salt, and that is every time a major world event happens, it throws or skews the result of the statistics, meaning that the statistic is no longer reliable. So is it the case that the fact that we've had a lockout period where people had to work from home for almost 12 months, has that dramatically changed the work from home ethic so that now people would invest in any area they like because they like the area instead of how close it is to their jobs?
That was my next question, Amir.
Has it changed?
The whole concept of working from home has definitely, or appears to have definitely, impacted people's perception of real estate and where they live. And is that trend likely to continue? I think so. What about you, Amir? Do you think that the whole concept of work from home has enabled people to really start looking at regional places as an alternative place to live versus cities?
I like to think of it as somebody in their impressionable years. If somebody today is a 15-year-old and you ask them what the world will be like in 15 years, they will be 30 years old at that stage. If they're 15 today and for the last 12 months they saw their parents and potentially their grandparents using a computer to work, using video conferencing to work, that means that that 15-year-old is now 100% comfortable with working from their mobile phone, from their laptop, from their Zoom or video conferencing facility. They're comfortable with it. It's in their mind, and they, You don't have to teach them how to do it. It's just like, yeah, of course, that's what everybody does. Everybody does that. But because of that comfort level, that means when they're 30, for them to think, what will they do for work? Their first thought is, well, what did my parents do? And I know that they use this. So they'll pick either that or a superior technology to do it. So what that means is
that's the consideration to me, isn't it?
That's right. There
indeed will be some superior technology in terms of the way we do things, the way we communicate, the way we travel even. And that impacts on real estate decisions as well.
It does. So the funny thing is that when you have an influence on a child and that influential person lives at home and the child lives at home, they have more interaction with that person than they do with the outside world. And they might watch fantasy TV, they might watch videos, they might watch computer games, but the biggest influence in their life is the person living in the same house with them. So if they see that person interacting on the computer with people, that would give them the biggest step forward into realizing that that's a reality and that they can do that if they wish. There are some jobs that are very difficult to replace. So let's say that you wanted your house painted. So there's four ways to do that. You can have somebody travel to the place, paint it, and then travel back. You can buy a pre-established house that you have an empty piece of land. Somebody comes, they build the house, and they paint it. So you come in, you just get the keys, and you're ready to go. So you've never lifted a paintbrush in the first two options. The third one now, and it's not brand new, it's been around for around 4 years now, is for a printer to print your house. That's right. So right now in areas that are extreme cold or extreme heat, there are reasons why printing a house with a 3D printer can increase the insulation level against cold or heat. Because a lot of 3D printing is plastic based and uses a resin, there are some extremes that they handle well and some that they don't. There are some ratings like a BAL rating. So if you think about your, I don't want to get too technical, but if you think about the level of protection that a building has against a bushfire, that level of protection varies depending on how it was built and how many layers there are and what you can sacrifice and not sacrifice so that the roof doesn't collapse, so that the heat doesn't bend the metal, so that the embers, little bits of hot stuff that fly off, don't cause damage. There's so many little bits that are involved, but if you build everything from a printing point of view and you can control the thickness of the print, then the computer printer, the 3D printer, can change the level of resin you're using, the type of resin, the color of resin, so that you'll never need to paint the house again. And we set a fourth. So the first one is to travel. The second one is to buy a pre-established house. The third one is to have it printed in the color that you want. And the fourth one is cladding. So what that means is that like what we used to do 40 years ago with wallpaper instead of painting, the fact that we can roll sheets from a factory that have an ability to be modular, be in pieces, but stick on very quickly and pass the heat test and the insulation test and cover a lot of the things that people ask for means that in the future it's possible that there will not be any more painting jobs in the world. That the job of painting as a skill will stop. Because why would you paint something when you can pick the color and guarantee that that's what will arrive? Because the printer, you're feeding in the resin that's that color, it'll always turn out the same. Or the modular wall that you're picking, you've seen the whole sample and it just gets delivered on one flat pack and it gets stapled, glued, or somehow built onto your house.
Yes.
So that means that some of the jobs that are out there will go out of fashion, will just not exist in 2035, 2036. So when we have the next Olympics.
Exactly. So if we can 3D print houses, then correspondingly, the existing old houses that will still need painting may indeed be painted by drones or robots. Conversely, couldn't we? In our lifetime, Amir, we could actually see some of those technological advances really start to play out in real estate in terms of where we live, how we purchase, how we renovate. That's pretty exciting, isn't it?
It's very exciting. And that touches on something that I'd like to speak with you about next week, which is the jobs that are on a site that require you to wear a special mask to protect you as a human. Can they be replaced by a robot? So I'm talking about asbestos removal. I'm talking about spray painting.
Yes.
Even some of the paints that we use that require us to wear a full face mask, a full head gear. And, you know, there are some things that are bad for humans, mold. So when you get black mold or when you, you know, there's so many little things that exist in crawl spaces under a house that the cost of paying a robot to come and do it, when you weigh that up against the 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 people that would supervise the job, because one's on the outside, 2 are on the inside, then a third one has to be used for something else. Once you add up the skill level that's required, then you add in the travel cost because those people might be coming from one city to another. Then all of a sudden, getting a drone teaching it once or getting a robot teaching it once and having it duplicate the same job.
Pretty attractive.
Without needing to breathe, without needing a respirator, without getting sick, without having to pay the insurance. It's very attractive, especially if you've got control, even if it's via a remote control. A lot of the handheld personal drones that we use, the ones that are less than one kilo, they're so easy to control. And they've got sensors that stop you doing silly things. So a lot of the things that scare people in autonomy, in robots being too self-aware or doing things without consideration of the environment around them, half of that stuff is fixed when you're wearing glasses that are those virtual reality glasses that let you see from where you're standing what's happening in the non-safe area. So we've used that for many, many years in terms of robotics within a factory. So from a mega robotics point of view, that automation has been there for about 25 years, give or take. So people have had that type of vision, looking at a screen, controlling something. That's been around for 25 years. We're now at the stage where the internet is fast enough and has enough control to be able to do that. And because of these little 750 grand drones that we're using that has the artificial intelligence inside to predict where the branches are, to not smash into things, that can be and already is adapted into the little robots that do the Megatronics trends. So we're not that far off. It might be a year before we're there. That doesn't mean that you've got a robot that's human size that's walking around like a human and doing all those tricks.
No.
They might exist, but they're too expensive. But if you think of just something where you can push the trolley up to the bit that you need done, you walk away, you put your glasses on and you control it, we're not very far away from doing that, actually.
I agree. I mean, we are just about out of time again. Before I go, I want to thank you for sharing with the audience your expertise around real estate. We've wandered and meandered along quite a few subjects today. It was important to discuss with the audience the 3DB concept and how you as a real estate agent, a buyer's agent, helps people find property that is appropriate to either their desire to live in or their desire to invest. You cover both of those subjects really well and have a wealth of experience around those. Amir, thank you so much again this week for talking about your renovation plans. And it was wonderful to talk to you about the advances in technology for the future. That, my friends, is our lot for this week. I'd like to thank Amir, real estate agent, for his time today and for sharing his wisdom. And that is your lot for this week. Bye for now, everyone. Bye, Amir.